phone. Don't need no speedy car to get me home. Don't need no nothing. All I need is time for the simple life.
California, who recount extraordinary life experiences for our radio listeners. We also have book reviews. We talk about some of the hottest titles in the store. And we get an inside perspective from every age. The most incredible stories are shared candidly here, person to person, with people from all walks of life. I'm your host today, Cynthia Fernandez, and our guest, Jenna Bell Bragg Gordon. I first met long ago at the Thunderbird Bookstore, where she managed the Whole Life Center. You know, that was the metaphysical section of the Thunderbird. Used to be in the Barnyard Shopping Center, for those of you listening who remember that. But I didn't really get to know her until many years later, when she came into the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and we had the most amazing series of conversations. You know, the kind that you have when your life sort of takes a turn and it leaves you open and vulnerable? Well, we became fast friends, and I was always fascinated by her eye for art and the most simple aspects of life. And I loved her sense of humor. She always left me giggling. And so over the years, she's worked with a number of really interesting situations. I'll start off by sharing with you her work with Deepak Chopra at the Chopra Center, where she wrote a book, collaborated a book there, Simple Celebrations. One of two cookbooks that she's written. She's had a couple of different restaurants, opened an art studio for the public to participate in, and she's been the managing director of the Carmel Music Society for a number of years. And we're going to find out what she's been doing lately with herself. So, Jenna, it's really nice to have you in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so glad you're here, because you're one of those people who, no matter what we talk about, we have a good time.
Yes, an hour won't be enough, but that's okay.
Yeah. So let's start, Jenna, by you maybe sharing with our listening audience about your beginnings.
Well, I am an Ohio girl. I grew up on my grandfather's farm, which sounds a little farmier than it really was. It was a gentleman's farm. He was a big businessman in Cleveland. He founded Bonnie Bell Cosmetics in the early 20s, in the 20th century. And the farm in Bath was his weekend place. And I was there for the first about 9 or 10 years. Oh, no, about 12 years of my life. Country life, private school, little Catholic girls' school, and went into public schools for a while, and then went back to work with the nuns for my high school years, and moved to California in 1967 with my year-old baby on my hip.
Wow.
And my life before me. I've always felt like I was born in Ohio, but I really grew up in California,
mm-hmm.
even though I didn't come here till I was 19.
Well, and that was a really sort of a magical time here, I guess.
Magical. It was very different here then, very different. When I tell you about my husband's book that just is being released, it's all about Carmel, and we have gone through so many pictures of Carmel as it was. And even in the 60s, it was so different than today. So different. The streets were different. It was so much quieter. It was more of a real art community.
Mm.
It's changed quite a bit, and it's still really beautiful. But I've been around almost 50 years here, and there have been a lot of changes. Lot of changes.
So having just kind of reviewed some of the pictures and details, can you share with us maybe the top three biggest changes that you noticed?
Since I've been here?
Yeah.
I knew everybody then. I've been here a long time and I still know a lot of people, but it is amazing to me how many more people and how many strangers there are to me.
Now, you're referring to people who actually live here?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
There's always tourists whom I don't know.
And there's part-time residents.
And they're part-time residents.
Yeah.
But just the people on the streets during the weekday, when you're more likely to run into the people, you know, the people at the post office.
Oh, right.
I go into the post office, and it used to take me an hour to get through the post office just because I'd run into people. And I see strangers there now. It's really different.
Really different.
What else is different?
So the population definitely has increased.
The population has increased and changed. When I first came here, it was really much more of an art community still. It seemed like there were more local artists in the galleries, fewer galleries for sure, but a lot more local participation. So I met those artists and befriended those people, and it was a smaller community, much smaller, tightly woven.
Yeah.
You know, it's expanded so much, and it's global like everything else now, and it wasn't then.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, I wonder how much the internet has impacted that.
Oh, a lot.
Happening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, push a button.
Well, just in terms of news travel and pictures and,
yes,
you know, blogs and
yes,
communication, it becomes very enticing when you see pictures of Carmel from anywhere. I mean, I live here, and they're enticing to me.
Right.
Makes me want to go to Big Sur every time I see a picture of the Bixby Bridge.
Right.
Yeah. So how about another of the top three?
How many was that?
That was one.
I would say that the beach is in. We just drove around the point today just because we could, because they're filming a movie down there today. We wanted to see what was going on.
Yeah.
And the beach was so entirely different than I remember. I remember my first Christmas here I spent on the beach with my little baby. And we sat at the right in front of the Frank Lloyd Wright house with his little sand bucket. And there was no one else on the beach. Now, mind you, it was Christmas morning, and
yeah,
you know, I'm sure they had other things to do. But I didn't.
Yeah.
And I was there with Michael, and that was 47 years ago. And it was a very, very quiet day, but it was pristine, beautiful, blue water. Christmas Day. Remember,
yeah,
I'm an Ohio girl. We had mounds and mounds of snow,
yeah, right,
on Christmas. I
right
learned to drive on the ice. So the beach has changed and gotten more active. And you know, there are more, it's funny, more beach umbrellas than I remember. You know, more stacks of people and big groups of people. I just remember it being a quieter beach on a...
Wait, was it as much a dog town then?
No.
Like, when I go to Carmel Beach, one of my enjoyments, actually, is watching all of the dog interactions, the dog society that lives in and near there and visits there daily. But you're describing no one on the beach Christmas morning years ago.
Well, I'm sure that there were people walking their dogs, but I don't remember it being so specifically dog-oriented
like it
is now.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to knowing more about this book, so let's just plug
it
now.
Let's just segue right in there. I just have a copy for you right here.
Oh, look at that.
This is David's first publication.
David's husband?
David is my husband. Right. David Gordon is the dramaturge at the Carmel Bach Festival. That is loosely translated as the guy who knows everything and lights people up with information about the composers and the music.
Nice.
And what is going on. He gives all of the lectures. And this book, called Carmel Impresarios, came out of his 75th Carmel Bach Festival anniversary research.
Wow.
And while he was researching, Dean Denny and Hazel Watrous, who were the founders of the festival, he found all kinds of information. And it was one of those situations where the same stories had been regurgitated over and over and over again throughout the years, and nobody really knew anything about them. So David had so much fun, and he is a dedicated researcher. And so we decided to do this book. And he spent the last 2 years researching. It's called a cultural biography. And it is called that because it is not only about Dean and Hazel and how they founded the Bach Festival and what they were doing in the 1920s and 30s, but what Carmel was like then. and how what that really, that was when it was really an artistic community.
Mm-hmm.
Neat, really cool pictures of the, you know, bohemian factions on the beach and doing their things. And there are almost 300 pictures in this book.
Oh my goodness.
And it's 408 pages of information about Dean and Hazel, what they did, how they founded the festival,
right,
where they started, their histories, their families. And I don't know if you remember know any information about things like the theater wars when they, this is in the 30s and 40s, when there are two or three different theaters and they would sabotage each other and trying to get, you know, well, I want the audience, you can't have the audience. So it covers a broad spectrum of things that were going on in Carmel 100 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
So the pictures start really in the late 1800s, their lives, their parents' lives, how they all got to California, what happened in Carmel, and how they founded the Carmel Bach Festival. They founded Carmel Music Society. They took over the first theater in Monterey and were the originators of the Troopers of the Gold Coast and did theater productions there for something like 20 years.
Wow.
They were fascinating women. They were true partners, business and life partners. They were wonderful, interesting women. Dean was a pianist. Hazel was an artist. They designed 36 houses in Carmel.
Really?
In the 20s. That's how they started their sort of bankroll to do what they did. And they were the backbone of that part of the artistic community. The quotes about them in this book are just amazing because they were such a force.
Wow. So, Jenna, tell us, when are we going to have this book at Pilgrim's Way Bookstore? When does it come out, really?
It really comes out next Friday.
Oh, my gosh.
They can be ordered next Friday, and they will be at the Bach Festival, but they will be at Pilgrim's Way tomorrow.
Yay! Did you catch that, Paul? Hope you're ready.
Well, they won't be for sale until the 20th, actually. I should take that back.
Well, I am going to need to get us going on a break here. But wow, that's exciting, Jenna.
It's
such
very exciting.
Good work. And what a team effort between you and David. I love it.
Team writing about a team.
Yeah. So we're going to take a short break, but I want to let everyone know who's listening that our guest today, Jenna Bellbrag Gordon, is a local with tons of stories, as you can hear, and cool information. We're going to have more time with her when we get back from this break. I want to mention for those of you listening that if you'd like archives from today's show or any previous show, they're available on either the website, pilgrimsway.com, or you can find them at iTunes. They're listed there. And at pilgrimsway.com, click on Simple Life Radio tab for prior episodes. And it usually takes me about a day to get our shows loaded. So stay with us. We'll be more to come with Jenna on Simple Life. We're back in the studio with our guest today, Jenna Gordon, and we're having a lovely conversation about the newest book release that she and her husband David have just gotten off the press, but it's their press.
Well, we are indie publishers, so we publish our books, and we have a select few of authors with whom we work who are also indie publishers, so we help them through the journey of getting a book published. We will mentor them through their writing, we will find editors, we work with print-on-demand printers, and we just make sure that the product that they're going to produce is worthy of them and worthy of having the Lucky Valley Press name on it.
And so if you want to get a hold of them, there is a website, LuckyValleyPress.com, or a phone number, local 831-238-1344. And so, Jenna, you guys really sort of work with someone who has a book they want to get it published.
Yes.
And there, I'm guessing there's a review process so that you consider what the project is?
Yes. Not everybody is ready to be published. And I am interested in working with the people who have a product. I mean, I have mentored a couple of people through their process, but I enjoy working with people who have a product. They want to put it out there. They just don't know what to do. And we are both adept at the computer. We work with InDesign. We design our own books, and we will work with people. And I will say to someone, this has merit. Go back and do this, and we will talk again. And so as a mentor, I feel that's really important. If somebody has a book that we think works with our format and what we do, then we will design it for them if they have not had that done already. And we will put it through the what we call the indie process, which is getting it into the system. We work with a printer that is associated with Ingram. So when you choose, if you choose, your books are automatically distributed to Amazon, and you know they're online the minute you get into print. So we will do that and nurture the process for people, because you know if you've written a book, then you're a writer. But you're not necessarily, you don't have the information or the knowledge to produce it in any quality way. And that's what we're doing.
You know, it's great to know about this, Jenna, because a lot of folks come into the bookstore and ask Paul or myself for referrals. And they're most often they're really trying to do a self-publish. They have a memoir or they have something that's mm-hmm. really precious to them. And they're trying to get it into print, and they're not sure how to do it. So that's where you guys come in.
We do, and we have been involved with one local cookbook author who really didn't want. It's not really, you know, it wasn't self-publishing. It's a quality book. He's a known character. We helped him put it together, but he chose not to do the print-on-demand route. Because he didn't really feel like he needed to be on Amazon. And so that was a different deal for him. So we designed it, and then he was on his own. So we will take, we care about the kind, you know, we won't take on just anything, because we care about the kinds of books that will have our name on them. Mm-hmm. So
what kind of books are you looking for? Is it a particular genre or a quality of content?
We're interested in history books, good novels, cookbooks, local interest, self-help kind of a book, memoirs. We're working on a book with a really lovely guy that is a book of hours about... it's called Jesus and the Practice of the Golden Rule, and it's this lovely, lovely book of hours about doing your daily practice, really whatever it is, whether it's about Christianity, Jesus, or, you know, your own style of meditation. And it's basically about how you treat people and how you expect to be treated.
Nice.
So it has quality and depth, and that's what we care about.
How did you get started with... The press company, this is really fairly new, isn't it? Putting this whole thing together?
It's about 2 years old. Let me see how I can say this diplomatically. I have several cookbooks in print. And because I am a designer, I very carefully put together this third book in the series. I have a memoir series that is about cooking called Honey Baby Darlin'. And the first two books in that series were published by someone else. And when I got around to doing the third book, I had designed it very carefully. And let's just say that the publisher with whom I was working on that book didn't do it to my specs. It became something entirely different. And I turned to David and said, I could do better than this. And he said, yes, you could. And then he just looked at me like,
well,
okay. So he said, what would you call it? And we consider ourselves very lucky. We're very lucky people. We have nicknames for each other, which have the word lucky in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we live in Lucky Valley. We live in Carmel Valley, but for us, it's Lucky Valley. So I said, Lucky Valley Press. And he said, okay. And we started to talk about it, and we put together this third book called The Gingerbread Farm. It was my first publication for Lucky Valley, and I was able to design, edit, have editors, I don't edit my own work, produce and publish this book without anyone else. It's definitely a learning process, but we, through that work and our first few books, we became what we believe are really good quality, thoughtful indie publishers. And we have taken on a few more clients. We realized that this is, I was thinking about Louise Hay. I had a conversation with a girlfriend about Louise Hay the other day. She didn't really start Hay House until she was well into her 60s.
That's right.
She's 90-something now.
Yes, she is.
And she's still going strong. And Hay House is, a, pardon the pun, a powerhouse of information for people.
Mm-hmm.
And David and I will both be 67 this year, and I feel in some ways like we just got started. And the rest of our lives will be devoted to, as my business card says, Lucky Valley on one side. That's all about words. And Carmel Art Farm, which is all about everything else. Art, books, the things I go home and make when I'm not writing. Food.
So crafts and food.
Crafts, cooking, growing things. It's everything else.
And where is it located? Is
wherever
this an actual...
I am.
Okay, so it's not an actual gallery or studio
no.
anywhere.
No, we have a mobile tent, and we'll be out at the Art and Wine Festival in the Village next weekend, the Carmel Valley Village. We were at the Me Earth Show a couple of weeks ago, which was very successful. We have a lovely website called Carmel Art Farm. We have an Etsy shop associated with Carmel Art Farm. And I have three artists now working with me. So I represent other artists who use recycled items or who will recycle or upcycle. So we make a lot of things that either come out of the garden, my gourd purses. We make food items sometimes that come out of the garden or other people's gardens. I've made clocks out of magazine, rolls of magazines. We teach people how to recycle old books by making these really fabulous shapes of things by just folding books. I'm sure you've seen folded books.
I have.
And that's how I got involved with Me Earth, because I'm their sort of resident artist. So I my contribution is teaching people how to make things out of recycled materials.
We really need more of that. I'm very passionate about repurposing things.
Yes.
And for me, Jenna, when I repurpose something, it actually changes my psyche. It has me look at new item purchases differently.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you agree?
Oh, it has me look at not only new items, but everything that goes through my kitchen.
Yeah.
Everything I would ordinarily throw in the garbage. In fact, one of my favorite stories about this, the whole Carmel, how doing Carmel Art Farm and getting involved with Me Earth, is that I was unpacking some bottles out of a box, and I started pulling this paper out, and I pulled and pulled and pulled and pulled, and I ended up with 90 feet, one long section, 90 feet, 12 inches wide,
yeah,
of packing paper.
Oh my gosh.
And there's a video on the Carmel Art Farm website that shows a lot of different things that we do, but it shows the construction that I made from that paper of a big bowl made out of what they call paper slats.
Ah.
Of cutting things into, tearing it into strips and slats and gluing them together in the coil, and it made a bowl about, I think the bottom of the bowl is 18 inches.
Yeah.
And the top width of the bowl is probably
2 feet.
2 feet.
Yeah.
It's a big, lovely bowl out of this wonderful green paper that somebody else would have just thrown in, even
thrown
in the
away.
Recycling bin.
Very
I look
true.
At newspapers, magazines, bottle caps, anything made of paper.
Yeah.
I don't really like working with plastic all that much, so I kind of stay away from that.
Well, that's for those fashion people down in Big Sur.
Yes, trashin'. It's for trashin'.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's amazing, and you're right. You know, a lot of people that I run into will say, well, I recycle. I just throw it right in the recycle bin. And,
right.
And for me, that is... You know, that's something you can do, but hopefully you do it much later down the way.
But see, what we're talking about is upcycling.
Upcycling.
So that is really thinking about it before you throw it away.
Yeah.
And thinking about how you might use it. How can you teach your children to be more conscious of what they're throwing away? So for the Me Earth show, and Me Earth is, I don't know if you know about Me Earth, but it is a lovely organization associated with Carmel Middle School, wherein they teach people about environmental issues, about recycling, solar power, water, conservation, and they have a summer camp. So part of the summer camp is really, I'm interested in teaching the children, teaching the counselors to teach the children how to make stuff themselves that out of things that they would, like you say, just ordinarily toss in the recycling bin, thinking that they were doing a really good thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my grandchildren are saving things for me now that they want to make something out of when they come up. And they bring their own paper and they have favorite magazines. We're going to save these colorful red parts and use them on this bowl. And
oh, nice.
We've made some really great things.
That is so inspiring, Jenna. I'm so glad to hear the activities that are going on around Carmel and through Me Earth Organization. I know that they have been a very active part, even back when they were part of the school district.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
was their mission,
right,
to educate around sustainability, and they've done a wonderful, wonderful job. We've hosted John Young, who's a naturalist up north of us here, a couple of times there at their facility, mm-hmm. and been part of Earth Day celebrations.
Yes.
And so I'm so glad. What a natural connection
that is.
It was
totally natural.
Totally.
I just felt like I'd come home. It was the new nonprofit for Jenna's involvement.
Well, and isn't that historically really what artists do? I mean, to make art is to take something that is otherwise completely divorced from what your new vision is. Right?
Well, yes. I mean, that's how I got started in this making gourd purses using gourds, because my colleague, Day Thomas, asked me last spring, would you just throw some gourd seeds in the ground in your garden for me? And I said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do that for you. And then I'm just as much of a geek as my husband, and I started thinking about gourds and started researching them, and I ended up with, I think I own about 8 books about gourds now. And not only did I grow 50 gourds last year, but I started buying certain things, and I love these canteen gourds, so I'm buying the gourds so that I can save their seeds so that I can grow my own next year. And so you're taking something that, with a gourd, is inedible and has been around for millions of years for carrying things, packing food, carrying water. We're upcycling them into functional items. So I love making bowls and I love making different things out of gourds, but I love the idea that form follows function. And I love making functional items out of things that you would just walk by in some other...
Exactly.
You know, that it would just... stack of newspapers that you'd throw away, or gourds and other items out of the garden. We live along the river, and this spring, this winter, I walked along the river collecting willow branches, because, of course, I look at willow branches now thinking, oh, a basket. I can make a basket. I don't even have to go buy anything. I can make a basket from my own property.
Right.
So I've been drying the
willows.
The willow. The only problem is rehydrating, because
yeah.
they're about 4 feet long and you have to figure out a place. I don't have a horse trough, so I have to hydrate them in the bathtub, which is a little obnoxious because you have to do it for 4 days. But,
yeah.
you know, I just say to David, just shove
just
the branches aside. It's fine.
Oh, my gosh. That is so inspiring. Gourds. Gosh. Well, listen, we're going to need to take our second break here. I want to let everyone know that the music that I'm playing at the break here is actually Chris Bode. This is from his Impressions album, and he's going to be, I saw somewhere, he's going to be at what used to be called Villa Montalvo over in Saratoga next month, I think around the middle of the month. If you haven't seen Chris Botti, he's, oh my gosh, incredible trumpet player. It talks about his early starting out days working with Frank Sinatra briefly. But he is, I think, a legend in his own time. And yeah, his album Impressions, which we do sell in our musical grouping at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden, downtown Carmel on Dolores between 5th and 6th. If everybody hasn't heard, maybe you don't get our newsletters for events, etc., what our activities are. We've changed our hours for summertime. And now we're open every day. And Friday and Saturday, we're open 10 to 7. The other days, Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 6. So, yeah, come down and see us. We got a lot going on in our little garden. I brought in some starts of tomato plants and Cinderella pumpkins to the secret garden from home. So drop by and see us. Stay with us. Our guest, Jenna Gordon, will be with us for more on Simple Life. We'll be right back. And we're back in studio. Our guest today, Jenna Gordon. This is Simple Life Radio. I'm your host, Cynthia Fernandez. And before the break, we were talking, well, we were talking about gardening. And one of the things everybody loves about their garden is the food that comes out of it. Now, Jenna, I know that you had previously had a beautiful restaurant in Carmel Valley called Jenna's Cafe, right there on Carmel Valley Road, and that you were also involved in managing both the cafe at the Thunderbird and also Cornucopia. But my question for you is, what was the most interesting cooking job you ever had?
Well, I'd have to say being the private chef for Steven Seagal. Deepak was interesting, really smart. David Simon, his medical director and my co-author for A Simple Celebration, really fabulous learning experience.
It had to be.
And I had a lot of fun, and we got a lot of press then, and it was a really big deal. But during a time period when we were shut down at the Chopra Center for remodeling, they basically kind of loaned me out to Steven Seagal. And the great part about that story is that Dr. Simon called me and said, how would you like to use this time by cooking for Steven Seagal? And he said that like I really was supposed to know who that was. And I I said, sure, okay. And so we talked all about it. And he said, well, he'll be calling you, and I'll give him your number, and you'll talk to him, and then you'll go interview, blah, blah. I said, fine. I hung up the phone, and I called my son, and I said, Michael, who's Steven Seagal? And Michael, who is a big martial arts aficionado, said, oh, Mom, you have to go do this job. I'm coming with you. You have to do it. In fact, let's watch the movie tonight. Let's watch Under Siege. No, let's watch. And I said, no. I'm going to go to that interview not knowing the movie star.
I'll go knowing.
I'll meet the man.
Yeah.
We'll watch the movies when I get back.
Right.
So I went to L.A. for the interview, and basically I cooked my first meal for him that night and had to go back to San Diego for a few things, but I stayed there working with them for almost 8 months.
Wow.
And it was a hoot. It was a hoot.
So tell us about the man, Steven Seagal.
The man, Steven Seagal, is extremely full of himself. He's also very smart. I love hanging around smart people. He surrounded himself with three assistants in the house, 17,000 square foot house, two nannies for the children who didn't live there full time, but they were there. A bodyguard, a big white limo. And I'm proud to say that I was only in the limo twice in the hall. That my first day when we went to, there was a guy visiting him who was associated with the Self-Realization Fellowship in the Yogananda's in Pacific Palisades. And we had a private meditation time on the houseboat, which is where Yogananda lived. And this little houseboat on the lake there. And so it was just, here I was, me, Steven Seagal, and this one other person whom I'd never met, sitting in this lifeboat. I mean, this not a lifeboat, it's a little houseboat, where Yogananda stayed when he was there for about an hour and a half. And then I cooked for Steven for the next 8 months, and the last time I was ever in the limo, and they wanted me to just, you know, be a part of the family and live there forever and go with them wherever they went, and I really had to keep my distance because you can get swallowed up in that situation
very easily.
But he was filming Glimmer Man at the time, and so I cooked in the honey bucket where his star trailer. One of the best parts of that job was the day that it was pouring rain, and they were choreographing a fight scene. And they couldn't do it out in this big warehouse where the actual scene was going to take place. So all the, what I call the camp followers, the Steven Seagal hangers-on, everyone was kicked out of the trailer except me, because I was making lunch and dinner. And so they left me over in this little kitchen area, moved all the furniture out, moved everything out of the way. I'm over there chopping carrots, you know. And these two guys came in and choreographed this fight scene. This is where you get thrown into the taxi window and the window will shatter. And this is where you throw the credit card that's actually a razor blade at this guy and you do this. And it took them about 2 hours. And I had to stop working finally and just watch them because it was so great. So that happened, and it took the whole afternoon. And then the next day, I was in the honey bucket doing my thing. And Steven sent somebody over to get me, said, go get Jenna, because she saw this choreographed. I'll bet she'd like to see it. I wish I had a picture of this, because he sat me down in his star chair that said Steven Seagal on the back and put his jacket on me. And I watched the scene. And I have to tell you, now I know that, because I know David's listening, I have never seen that movie. I have never seen Glimmer Man, because I saw it being filmed, and I just thought that the whole experience of being there in the middle of everything was so great that I didn't want to see the movie because I was so in it.
You were satisfied.
I was completely
satisfied. How could it get better?
Couldn't have gotten any better than that.
Of course, a number of years later, it might be nice to see.
Well, that was almost 15 years ago. Yeah. I could probably handle it now.
Yeah. Wow.
But he was amazing. He was really interesting. I met all kinds of people there, movie stars and congressmen, and they all wanted something from Steven. And he was really wheeling and dealing then.
Did you actually include this story in any of your memoirs, any of the books you've written?
Not yet. That is book three. Book one covers the years on my grandfather's farm, cooking at the feet of my masters, my mother, and the farm staff. Book two covers the Gingerbread Farm, covers my first years in Carmel Valley. And book three is called the Golden Gate Retreat Farm. And that covers the professional years, because I really consider, although I've had restaurants, I'm a retreat cook. You know, I cook for people who are working on their stuff.
Nice.
And I love that. That's my favorite kind of cooking, is to be in the background holding the space for people who are working on their stuff, whatever that is.
Wow.
And I've done yoga retreats. I did a thing for Whole Foods, a kind of a, you know, staff conference for Whole Foods way back in the old days. Working for Deepak certainly was that kind of thing all the time. Rainbow Ranch, I cooked there for a couple of years. Everybody went to Rainbow Ranch for their spiritual retreats. And I found that the most satisfying. So Steven Seagal was the most fun and the most interesting, but the most professionally and spiritually satisfying was the work I did for retreat cooking, for just being there, being the person who builds the fire in the morning, makes the coffee. I lived in a teepee then, by the way. And so I would, you know, sleep in my teepee, get up in the morning, be in the kitchen by five, build the fire, make the coffee, could hear sort of in a muffled way all the work that was going on, that people were doing, their music or their drumming or their chanting or their conversation or whatever they were doing, and how they looked forward to the food every day. And it was much more than physical sustenance.
Right.
It was a whole part of their gestalt, you know. It was a whole part of the time period, or whether it was a week, a weekend. Longest one I did there at Rainbow was 2 weeks of a Marion Rosen bodywork conference, 100 people or so. Was very, very satisfying.
So you are a doula with food.
I am. That's right. That is pretty much it.
That's lovely. So when is that book coming out?
Well, I set that book aside for a little while so I could help David with Carmel Impresarios. So I thought perhaps while the Bach Festival is in full swing this year and David is really busy during the month of July, I could finish my book so that I have it ready for our big kickoff event for Lucky Valley Press, which will be at Hidden Valley out in the valley, in Carmel Valley, on September 21st. So that will be a combination of things. Concert by David and his associate Melinda Coffey, slides probably of things to do with Carmel Impresarios. We'll have our other authors there. We'll have food. We'll have all kinds of interesting things that will kick off Lucky Valley Press. And of course, you always have to remember that on the flip side is Carmel Art Farm, which is mostly Jenna and all the artsy things that I do. So with luck, God willing, and the creek don't rise, the Golden Gate Retreat Farm will be there for that event.
Oh, nice. And that's in September.
That's in September.
Well, make sure and bring a flyer by, because you know we post all those events and class flyers in the bookstore.
I have a bag filled with so much stuff for you, Cynthia.
I can't wait. Well, listen, before we run out of time completely, since we are sponsored in part by Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, I like to ask people their all-time favorite book. So you tell me, what's your all-time favorite book?
I have read Gone with the Wind 47 times.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I really have. I have read it once a year all my adult life. I don't know why, because I could read it to you. I could recite it to you. I know it
no
so well.
No doubt.
But to me, that is the quintessential novel. And I love historical novels because I like to learn something when I'm reading. But as a writer, I love that writing, and I love the storytelling. And I read it partly just because I love I enjoy it, but I read it because when I read now, sometimes I just read it for the joy of a sentence. You know, just some sentence I really love, or a description that someone does.
Well, that is another form of art, Jenna.
Yes, yes.
And so what are you reading now?
I'm reading a book called The Pearl That Shed Its Skin, That Broke Its Shell. The Pearl That Broke Its Shell. I'm looking this up so I can really tell you about it. It is about, it's by Nadia Hashimi, and it's about a young Afghanistan girl who is in a household full of girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tough scene at any time in Afghanistan, but especially now, to have nothing but girls because of all the action on the streets. They're not safe. So in this book, and I'm just really beginning it, there is a history with the Afghani people of sometimes one of the young girls in a family full of girls living as a boy in order to be free out in the world and protect the sisters. And so they choose someone, and this girl is the one chosen. It's this really interesting story about modern life and her particular story in Afghanistan.
Wow.
Yeah.
How timely.
It's very good.
I love all of the strong female roles that have been sort of building over the last decade, I think. Divergent is what you're reminding me of, where you really have a strong female protector character.
I'll tell you, the other book that I just recently finished is the Elizabeth Gilbert book, The Signature of All Things.
Uh-huh.
Have you read that?
I have not.
Well, I listened to it, and I can't think of I'll think of it when I'm leaving here, the narrator's name. I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and she's a lovely reader, and it is one of the, I read it twice within a month. It was so beautiful.
Wow.
And it's so big, and it's a woman's story. It's so beautifully done that I read it twice within a month.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
Signature
amazing.
Of All Things. It's really
Signature
lovely.
Signature of All Things.
She's a good writer, that girl.
Well, Eat, Pray, Love. I don't know how you top
Can't
that
beat
one.
It.
My goodness. So, Jenna, in the last couple of minutes, I've been inviting my guests to join in envisioning the future. We hear a lot about how our thoughts are things,
mm-hmm.
mostly from quantum physicists.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pose the question to you, what would you envision for our future?
Getting small. Everything's so big. The kids are growing up so much faster. Everything is so big. And I think, you know, I don't think the world is any worse than it's ever been. It's a crazy place to live. But the, like you said earlier, the internet has made everything so immediate. And children have no chance to be children much anymore. I would like things to be, the communities to be more connected, the families to be more connected in a smaller way, just to communicate with each other.
A closer connection, perhaps.
Much closer connection.
Yeah.
Because I think that's getting lost. You know, watching kids sit around a dinner table with their cell phones or their electronic devices. I make everybody put their phones in a basket and they can pick them up when they're done.
It's a good practice. Actually, at the Tularcitos Elementary School in Carmel Valley, they're incenting the kids to turn off their screens for a week. And if they're willing to do that, they'll throw an ice cream party for them at the end of the week.
Well, we have a television screen. We have a beautiful big screen, that, but we aren't connected to anything but movies.
Nice.
And I haven't watched it. I have watched one television show, I think, on my Kindle. But I just don't watch television because there's so many other things to do.
Well, that's for sure. And actually, yeah. That is what we end up getting robbed of, is all those other things to do. And I hate to say this in a way, because I love movies too.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, let's think about it. On the one hand, you watch other people have activity in their life.
Right.
And then the trade-off is you could have activity in
right.
your life.
Right.
Oh, it's been so great having you, Jenna. Thank you so much for being here.
It's been
here.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'll come back if you ask me.
Absolutely. And I'll be back here with you all next Saturday on Simple Life. Stay with us.